Hello everyone and welcome to the March ADA Audio Conference Series. The ADA Audio Conference Series is a project of the ADA National Network. The ADA National Network is funded by the U.S. Department on Health and Human Services, HHS. And the ADA National Network is comprised of 10 regional ADA centers throughout the country. So I want to welcome all of you to the March session today. We have a great topic and we have a fabulous speaker joining us today. He has some valuable information that he's going to share with us and at the end there's going to be an opportunity for you to ask questions ask questions of our presenter, Joel. Joel Schneider is our presenter today. He is the president of the Audio Description Associates, and he is also the director of the Audio Description Project for the American Council for the Blind. If you wish to see Joel's full bio, you can find that on the ADA Audio webpage, ada-audio.org. So with that, Joel, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you for today's session. So welcome, Joe.
Great. Thanks, Peter. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you to Robin Jones as well and her great staff at the ADA Center. It's a pleasure to be here indeed and share a bit about something I care deeply about, audio description, access to visual images primarily for people who are blind or have low vision. I'm presenting a slide right now, and you might think, my understanding is that folks who are on the webinar who use screen readers can read the text that's there, but they may not be able to pick up on that little image that I have at the bottom of the slide. There is a white square box, and within it, two letters in black, bold, A-D. The top of the A is tilted over to the right. That left side of the A is leaning to the right, and to the right of the curve in the D, three curved lines. So I wanted to do that simply to indicate that audio description is not just for video, for film, for theater, for museums. It can be for presentations like this when images are being presented and you may not really know who in the audience can, perhaps is blind, perhaps has low vision, perhaps is just too far away from the screen. So audio description for images and presentations, I think, is a great idea. Just something to keep in mind, I think, as we proceed. Let us proceed. What better way to begin our work together on description than with description of two visual images. Here's the first, The Fan by John McPherson. On a stage at left, a woman in a flowing gown, her hands clasped in front of her, stands before a kneeling man in a doublet and feathered cap. He croons, "Why doth thy heart turn away from mine?" At right, a man at a microphone speaks. Basically, the guy with the goofy hat is kicked because this babe has been running around with a dude in the black tights. The caption reads, "Many opera companies now provide interpreters for the culturally impaired." Once again, folks who may be in a row, I've done this presentation, I've shown this particular slide, oh golly, probably 1,000 times around the world. And folks that are sitting a little bit farther away from the screen, they can't make out that bottom caption. So there you go, audio description is for people who are blind or low vision, and for folks who are too far away from the screen. For television, it's for folks who are in the kitchen making a sandwich. The TV is on in the next room. They don't miss a beat. They're not blind, but they just don't have access to the visual image. I dare say as well that sighted people could look at this cartoon and wonder, what is that on the top of that fellow's head kneeling at the center of the stage? Well, doublet and feathered cap. There you go. So the description provides some information for sighted folks, because we know sighted folks, they see, but they don't observe. And that's an important point, too. So audio description, I'm a big booster for description in a wide range of settings and for a wide range of folks in our audiences. One more cartoon for you. Actually, I've got two more. But anyway, here you go. Red and Rover by Brian Bassett. In the first panel, Red, a red-haired 8-year-old boy. He's outdoors, lying on the ground against the tree, facing away from us, and his right arm is around Rover, a white short-haired dog, a lab-eagle mix. A leaf falls. Red announces, "Brown!" In the next panel, as Rover's tail taps, Red notes, "Orange, red, yellow." In the following panel, Red, orange, yellow, yellow. Next, Red turns toward us, eyes wide, and tells us, "Dogs only see in black and white." The final panel depicts a more full view of the tree, leaves scattered about the pair as Red continues, "Yellow, orange, brown, red, orange." There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, audio description for dogs. Sighted dogs, nonetheless. There you go. It comes up in all kinds of settings and with all kinds of audiences, as I said. I've got another cartoon here that...
Hey, Joel?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, this is Peter Stinner. Can you just give us the slide numbers to help keep folks oriented and where you are?
You bet.
Thank you.
I've turned to slide 14. Brewster Rocket. I like doing this slide because the issue of color and description always comes up. Brewster Rocket, Space Guy by Tim Rickard. In the first panel, Brewster is wondering to himself. He has his hand at his chin. He says, "I've heard that we can see red and be purple with rage." In the next panel, cowards can be yellow. We can be in the black or in a gray area, be green with envy, in the pink, and have the blues. But what does being orange mean? And one of Brewster's colleagues walks by, the front of his chest is smeared with orange. He holds a bag of orange Cheetos and says that, "I really, really like Cheetos." That's what being orange means. Brewster says, "I doubt that saying will ever catch on." Yeah, color. Color is important to include with description. Keep in mind, folks, when they hear about description and they hear that it's a service, an assistive technology for folks who are blind, you hear the word blind and they think, oh, blind, see nothing, have never seen anything, congenitally blind. Well, that's a small portion of the audience for audio description. Most people using description can see, they have low vision, they can see, particularly if you tell them where to look, that sort of thing. But even more than that, people who are congenitally blind, they know what color is. They know that we can see red, as Brewster says, or be purple with rage. They grow up in the world and they hear people use words that signify more than just a frequency of light or a hue. They mean emotions. They mean all kinds of things. So congenitally blind people, by and large, can appreciate the use of color in description. You don't want to overdo it necessarily, but it is something that certainly can be used and is helpful in description. A little bit about the history of audio description. I'm very fond of saying that it all began in prehistoric times. I wasn't there. I'm not quite that old, but I've heard that there were two sighted cavemen in a cave. They were munching on some leftover saber-toothed tiger, as I recall, and suddenly one of them says to the other, "Look out, Og! There's a mastodon coming from the left." There you have it, the origins of audio description. And Og is not even a blind guy, he's just facing the wrong way. So that's a lighthearted, perhaps, example of audio description, making the point, of course, that audio description is used by so many people all day, every day. They don't know they're using it. And until the 70s, there was no formal study of audio description. Nowadays, people in Europe can get their master's degree. I have a PhD from the University of Barcelona focusing in audio description. There really are fundamentals. There are ways to teach audio description. There are do's and don'ts. There are best practices. But continuing on, I'm not going to bring you up to the 70s just yet. I do have an image I want to share with you that speaks to some early audio description. Slide 15, you have a black and white image of a man wearing round glasses, somewhat round man, if you will, a shock of dark hair falling across his ample forehead. He's seated at a desk. He wears a double-breasted suit jacket. He's got some pages in his hands. He's looking at those pages. He's got a pen in his right hand, and his left hand is near a microphone. It says WNYC. That's all the clues I'm going to give you. Do any of you know who this fellow is? If you do, you're probably as old as I am or something. But anyway, you're looking at the image of Fiorello LaGuardia. How does he figure into the history of audio description? Fiorello LaGuardia was the mayor of New York City in the 1940s. You may have flown to New York City and arrived at LaGuardia Airport. He was a much beloved mayor and very savvy. Very politically, very astute. There was a newspaper strike during his tenure, and you know, he didn't take the side of the newspaper publishers. He didn't take the side of the workers. You know, he took the side of the people, his constituencies. And he said to himself, you know, I got to do something to help folks during this strike. You know, what can I do? What's the first thing that folks turn to in their newspaper when they have it available, at least on Sundays, right? The funny papers, right? The comics, of course. Well, Mayor LaGuardia went on the radio every Sunday and he read the comics to the citizens of New York City and, of course, realized very quickly, whoa, how can you don't read comics by just voicing the text. You have to describe the images. And that's exactly what he did. He was one of the first audio describers. Ronald Reagan did a little bit of that as well when he did his baseball analysis and baseball announcing when he wasn't even at the stadium. He was just reading data off a ticker tape. But speaking of cartoons, that speaks to really where I started with all of this in 1972 as a reader for the Washington Ear, a radio reading service here in the Washington, D.C. area. I read the Washington Post on Sundays to listeners. And I got to the comics or I got to any illustration and I realized, whoa, I better convey this image to the folks who are listening. Well, a little bit later, about 1981, the Washington Ear and its founder, Margaret Fanshield, were involved in a group set up by Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. This was in 1981. I will interrupt myself and stress that in the late 70s, a man named Gregory Fraser did a master's thesis at San Francisco State on the idea of audio description. So it was really born with Gregory. He left us probably 15, 20 years ago, but a great man and a seminal figure in the history of audio description. But switching to the other side of the continent again in Washington, at Arena Stage, Margaret was on a panel that was to help Arena with accessibility issues, and they had just installed an assisted listening device. Wow, isn't this cool? People who are hard of hearing can now turn the volume up by way of a little receiver they have and an earbud. All that's connected to a microphone on the stage, and the sound is piped through that microphone through an infrared system, and it comes to your receiver. You can turn the volume up yourself. Wonderful thing. Well, Margaret Fansdale and another blind fellow who figures prominently in the development of description, Chet Avery, they were thrilled to hear about this, but they said, well, what do you got for us? Couldn't you use that same system and have someone speak into a microphone in the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue or between critical sound elements? Describe the action on stage. Describe the pertinent visual images. And from that idea, Wayne White at Arena Stage, the house manager there in Arena, they picked up on it. And Margaret went back to the ear. She pulled together about four or five of us who had backgrounds in theater and radio or English. And from that grew the world's first audio description service at the ear, started at Arena Stage. And of course, from then, it's some 35 or so years hence, from then, description developed for television in about 1985. We did the first descriptions for WGBH and TBS. They're the ones who piloted description for television. Now it's part of the law of these United States. It's not as it's not up to a level where I think it should be, but right now in the top 60 markets, about 4 hours per week, it comes out to 4 hours per week, must be described by each of the top 9 broadcasters. So television, it picked up in film. Museums are coming to audio description now, coming a little late, but they're there. And training of describers picking up all around the world. My company does description training. We've been in 45 countries now and help to promote what description is and what it can provide for folks who are blind or have low vision. And what is this audio description we speak of? I think of it as a literary art form. It's about words. I'm holding my hands way out to the sides. It's, no, you know, I'm going to narrow that down a little bit. I'm going to bring my hands in toward each other. It's a type of poetry. It's, well, you know what? I'm bringing my hands in close to each other now. It's a haiku. Why do I say that? Because description, at its best, provides a verbal version of the visual. The visual is made verbal, and oral, A-U-R-A-L, he points to his ear, and oral, O-R-A-L, he points to his mouth. Using as few words as possible, words that are succinct, vivid, and imaginative, we convey that visual information that's not fully accessible to a segment of the population. And you know, American Foundation for the Blind, some years back, not that long ago, put together a statistic from the United States Department of Labor statistics. They came up with the number that there are over 21 million Americans who are either blind or have trouble seeing, even with correction. That's our audience. 21 million, that's 8% of our population. Add to that their friends, their family, and people who can perhaps have cognitive disabilities, people that can learn by hearing as well as seeing. Description can benefit all of those folks. And of course, as I mentioned, visual images aren't fully realized by the rest of us. The rest of us, you know, those sighted folks who see but really just don't observe, don't notice. It's really useful for anyone who wants to truly notice and appreciate that more full perspective on any visual aid, but of course is especially helpful as an access tool for people who are blind or have low vision. We've done description, all those arts events, of course, at conferences, in schools, weddings, parades, rodeos, circuses, sports events. I've even described. So let me help you. I'm going to stop talking for a second. I'm going to help you see what description is all about by asking you figuratively to close your eyes. You don't actually have to close your eyes. I'm going to play a short excerpt, a little bit from a feature film that you may have seen a wonderful film, The Color of Paradise, an Iranian film, and one of my favorites, actually. I'm going to play just an excerpt from it, but you're not going to see the image. You're going to just hear what the soundtrack was, the actual soundtrack. I'm not taking anything away. So that shouldn't be a big problem. But for all intents and purposes, everybody on this call now is blind and cannot see what's going on in this film. Just listen to this for a little bit.
All right, thanks, Joan. Before we go ahead and push the video out, for those of you in the webinar room, you do not need to do anything. The video is being pushed out to your computer. It's going to play on your default video player on your computer. You do not need to do anything. Once the video ends, your focus will return back into the webinar room. For those of you that are using assistive technology, any screen reader users within the webinar room, again, you don't need to do anything to get the video to play. But once the video has ended, you may need to return your focus back into the webinar room. You may need to do an Alt tab to return your cursor's focus back into the webinar room. And one last thing, the video speed is going to be dependent on your individual internet connection. So we'll go ahead and play the video.
There you go. So do not adjust your television set, as they used to say. There's nothing wrong with your transmission. Actually, these first two clips are just audio. So you won't have to worry about seeing anything. Again, you're blind. Go ahead and play that first clip, color number one. Playing there, folks? Peter?
It is playing. They're hearing it in the webinar room.
Great. Well, just in the interest of time here, I'm going to stop it there. Wasn't much more there. So at this juncture, of course, I ask folks, well, golly, wasn't that great? Gee, what's going on there? And get all kinds of responses from folks. There are some birds. Birds, there you go. Nothing gets over that person's head. Yeah, they're birds. They're birds, uh-huh. What else is going on? Well, let's see, there's some... There's water going. Maybe there were seagulls. Let's see. There was a young woman, perhaps someone struggling. And we get into all kinds of things. It's a murder. It's someone's traipsing through a forest. All kinds of things that you imagine based on hearing the soundtrack only of a major feature film. Well, you know, the best films, they don't do a lot with dialogue. They're visual. And we as audio describers have to do our best to convey those visual images. So, without the audio description, not much is going on there. It's really, after a few minutes on this particular excerpt, you know, time to go home. Forget it. I'm not getting anything out of this. All right, let's try it one more time, another time, with audio description. Does it help? Does it focus you at all? Let's give it a try. Play that color number two. Let's stop that right there, just in the interest of time again. I think, did that come through, Peter?
The participants in the webinar room were able to hear that. I apologize that for folks that are participating on the telephone, we're not able to provide the sound. But you can be able to access the archive and hear what Joel has been speaking
about. Okay, good, good. Well, I suspect that's a lot more clear to folks. But, you know, usually at this juncture, I ask folks to describe the main character to me, Muhammad. Now, this is an excerpt from a film. The character of Muhammad would have been described earlier, his visage, what he looks like. But based on what they hear in the description, can you tell me something about Muhammad? And they, well, he's a kind boy. He's helping this little chick. He's agile. He can climb a tree, all of that. But if you listen carefully, you hear that the describer has picked up on what the director, the cinematographer, is showing us Muhammad in the tree that he climbs, using his hands to tap down a long branch, reaching up to let his fingers feel a small nest, etc. Sure, Muhammad is blind. He's doing all of this as a blind boy, quite a fearless young boy. And let's if you can stand it one more time, play just a little bit of it again now, of it again, but this time with the images, with the video. And what I would ask here is think about the description that you hear, at least those of you that are in the web room, and think about the images. Are they being described accurately, succinctly? Would you describe other things that haven't been described? Audio descriptions about what not to describe. There's no way we can describe everything, so we have to make choices. Go ahead and play this video for a little bit. oh, isn't that nice? That's the reaction. Oh, yeah. Speaking of children who are blind, I want to emphasize another application for audio description that I think is quite important, and this came up some years back when I was in New Haven doing an audio described tour for the Connecticut Children's Museum, and speaking to the teachers there. They had reading teachers that would work with kids who were blind, and we thought about developing more descriptive language to use when working with kids in picture books. Think about that. Those books rely on pictures to tell the story. But a teacher trained in audio description techniques would never simply hold up a picture of a red ball and read the text. Here it is. Oh, I'm going to skip ahead past these. I'm skipping past the script to Color of Paradise just to save a little bit on time. But there you have that picture of a red ball with the text, see the ball. Well, the teacher might add, that ball is red, just like a fire engine. I think that ball is as large as one of you. It's as round as the sun, a bright red circle or sphere. Now, what has teacher done with two lines of description? Introduced new vocabulary, invited comparisons, used metaphor or simile with toddlers. So, again, using description, sure, you make those books accessible to children who have low vision or are blind, and I think you develop more sophisticated language skills for all kids. A picture's worth a thousand words. You've heard that, of course. Well, maybe, but the audio describer might say that a few well-chosen words can conjure vivid and lasting images. And while we're on the subject of kids and kids who are blind or have low vision and the audio description, I have to tell you, I was very proud to produce the audio description for 6 years for Sesame Street on PBS, and we got a wonderful letter I have to tell you about from a blind parent of sighted children. And, you know, she's 40 years old. She remembers Sesame Street from her youth, listening to the sounds and the music and was delighted by it. But now, for the first time, she could follow along with her own sighted kids, the antics of Elmo and Bert and Ernie and all the other denizens of Sesame Street. So here's a little bit, just a little clip of Elmo's World for you. Is the video freezing up, Peter?
Nope, it's playing.
Great. Maybe give me a heads up, Peter, when it ends, because it's freezing up here.
Yep, absolutely. All right, it's finished. Joel, if you could again just orient folks on where you are in the presentation,
right.
Slide number.
You guys, sorry, I should be doing that. We're at slide 24 now. That was some... the Elmo clip for you, and sure, using description to make television show, Sesame Street, accessible to young kids, or to blind parents who want to follow along with their kids. I do want to emphasize one point. You know, description is, I think, far more important than simply making entertainment accessible. That's important, sure, but there's really no reason, no good reason, why a person with a visual disability must also be culturally disadvantaged. And that's what description can do. It brings a nation's culture to folks. In the United States, I'm sure you've heard this data before, the principal constituency for audio description has an unemployment rate of about 70%. Well, see, I think that with more meaningful access to our culture, television, film, museums, and all of its resources, people become more informed, more engaged with society, and thus more engaging individuals. And I think that means that they're more employable. So I'm going to just spend the next remaining bit of my time here, and we'll leave some time for questions, of course, to simply share with you what I have found about what I've learned that what it takes to offer description in ways that are most useful. I always start with a mention of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's brilliant detective, Sherlock Holmes. Well, brilliant, yeah, and incredibly observant. In developing description, I emphasize four elements, the first of which is all about that skill that Sherlock Holmes honed. Slide 25 here, there it is, observation. And I quote Yogi Berra, the great American philosopher, Yogi Berra, he said it best, you can see a lot just by looking. Well, an effective describer has to increase that level of awareness, become an active seer, if you will, develop a sense of visual literacy, notice the visual world with a heightened sense of acuity, and share those images. In the words of John Ruskin, we must seize what we see. Goethe talked about seeing with exactitude. And no less an authority than Helen Keller said it a little differently. She said, those who have never suffered impairment of sight or hearing seldom make the fullest use of these blessed faculties. Their eyes and ears take in all sights and sounds hazily, without concentration, and with little appreciation. That's slide 27, Helen Keller. But let's give you a little test here. Let's try the next slide, 28. Tell me, look at this image here. 87% of people that see this image can't see what's wrong with the picture. Can you? Of course, I can't hear any of you right now. But some of you guys who are already trained in observation techniques will note that the woman has six fingers. Got five of them there, her index finger at her mouth. Can't see her thumb, but they add up to six. That's a little different, isn't it? Sure. Tell me what you see here. Think about this anyway. What you see in this next image? Well, the FedEx logo. That's the most appropriate response, right? I don't know. FedEx logo, you know, five letters. Three in purple, two in orange, abutting each other, block letters. That's a logo. You know, they paid somebody many thousands of dollars. What could that be about? Why is that pathetic? Keep looking. Keep observing. And do you notice the white space between the E and the X? Okay, it's an arrow. An arrow pointing to the right. Moving. It indicates movement. What is it's delivering. FedEx delivers, right? I think that's maybe subconsciously what they're going for here. And I guess this applies to description not only from the standpoint of observation, but I think you have to remember in Paul Valéry's words, seeing is forgetting the name of what one sees. Slide 30. You know, it's one thing to know the name of something and you dismiss it. FedEx logo, okay, next. You don't really look. Well, to really see, you have to forget the name of what one sees. One more little test for you, and this is fun. Those of you who are habitual inhabitants of the web and YouTube will perhaps recognize this awareness test. Play this for us, will you please?
Joel, we're having some difficulty playing the awareness video.
Okay. Well, I'll summarize for you. I'll describe for you since you can't see it. You have a team of basketball players, and they're tossing a ball. Two teams, actually, one in white, one in black, and they're tossing the ball between their members. And at the end, they say, well, how many passes did the team in white make? Well, if you've been looking carefully, if you've been observing, you'll note 13 passes. But did you see the moonwalking bear? Ah! Oh my goodness. All right. That's why we play it again. And there he is, moving on from the right, moving left. There's a moonwalking bear in black. So it's a little difficult to see, perhaps. Going across the screen, nobody notices it. Few people notice it because they're focused on how many passes did the team in white make. You can find that easily on the web, on YouTube. There are clips for that all over the place. Observation, that's that first fundamental. Moving on, slide 32, editing. What is most critical to an understanding, he points to his head, and an appreciation, his hand is on his heart, of the visual image? Again, there's no time to describe everything that one can see, and I doubt even in a museum exhibit, there's no dialogue, no parameters to deal with that way, but do you want to listen to somebody describe everything that's in a picture without emphasis, without choosing, without picking? Well, I think perhaps not. Editing allows us to focus in on what's most important. We have to select what's most valid, what is most important, what is most critical to an understanding and an appreciation of an event. We are, in a way, like the artists that Oliver Wendell Holmes refers to in slide 33, the great struggle of art is to leave out all but the essential. And I think that actually allows us to see a lot more. For instance, in the next slide, number 34, well, excuse me, this actually is another quote here. Georgia O'Keeffe, the great, wonderful, American Western artist, she said it quite nicely. It's only by selection, by elimination, by emphasis that we get at the real meaning of things. That's what we're trying to help folks do who can't see images. And for instance, there's this image here, an image of Tiger Woods crouching, squatting on a green. He's got his putter leaning against his left shoulder, and he's got his hands cupped around the brim of his cap. His hands curled down the sides of his face, almost like blinders on a horse. What's he doing? Well, the caption says, to accomplish more, sometimes you need to see less. He's doing that for himself. He's putting those blinders up so that he can accomplish more. See less, focus on making the putt, and he will, of course. He's Tiger Woods, right? Sometimes to accomplish more, you have to see less. And that's what I think we can help people do by making careful and important choices of what we will describe. We do that based on an understanding of blindness and low vision. We go from the general to the specific, we use color, we include directional information, and we also try to develop a this is part of that visual literacy or cinematic literacy or theater literacy or visual art literacy. What is being conveyed by the director, the cinematographer, by certain camera angles? Clue into that. They're giving us hints as to what's most important to describe. The third fundamental of the four, moving on to slide 36, language. Less is more. Clarity, imagination, objectivity. This is where we spend the most time, I think, crafting the language. We transfer it all. We translate all the visual to words, objective, vivid, specific, and imaginatively drawn words, phrases, and metaphors. In the next slide here, I've got an image for you. You'll recognize this if you've ever been to to Washington, D.C. and seen the Washington Monument. Well, how do you convey the height of this shown in this picture? You could certainly say it's 555 feet tall. That's accurate. Is that the best way to describe it? Perhaps not. 500 feet. What does 500 feet mean? What does 500 square feet mean to someone who's not an engineer or an architect, you know? What about that Washington Monument? Well, it's 555 feet tall. It's this 50-some stories tall. It's as high as 55 elephants stacked one on top of the other. It's almost as tall as two football fields set up vertically. And, of course, it towers over the ring of American flags on flagpoles at the base of the picture. Sure. Slide 38, Jonathan Swift said it nicely. Vision is the art of seeing things invisible. There are no football fields here, but by invoking them, you help someone else see, feel, understand the height of that Washington Monument. In the Color of Paradise segment, there's no worm at the end, but by invoking the idea of a worm, he wiggles his finger like a worm, well, you convey what he's doing with his index finger, and of course, it, appropriately enough, goes right along with what is being seen, some small birds in a bird's nest, that kind of thing. Mark Twain said all of this, I think, in an even more clever way than Jonathan Swift. He said, you cannot depend on your eyes when your imagination is out of focus. So I want to share with you another film clip here, a real brief one. This one comes from the film The Book Thief that you may have seen. It's a fairly recent film. A scene where a young girl is describing the outdoors to someone who's not blind, but he's trapped in the basement of this home. And I think she does wonderful things with language at the encouragement of the gentleman for whom she's describing. Go ahead and play this short clip.
Try to play this one again.
Okay, try one
again. I'm in a little trouble.
It's just a minute. Well, I can tell you what goes on there, of course. He encourages her to describe what's going on outdoors. Can you try it again?
Give it another try here, Joel.
Well, You can try one more time, or should I stop it here?
Yeah, go ahead, Joel. It's not working on our end. Apologize for that.
It's all right. Yeah, you know, he encourages her to describe what's going on. Use words. Make them your own. And she describes the sun as a silver oyster. It's behind clouds, you know. It's a pale silver oyster. And the gentleman says, yes, yes, thank you. I saw that. In his mind's eye, he got a sense of what's going on outside. Language. We have to become walking thesauri, if you will. You know, how many words can you use to describe someone moving along a sidewalk? Well, why say walk when you can more vividly, imaginatively describe the action with sashay, stroll, skip, stumble, saunter, oh, and even other words that don't begin with S, actually. So, you know, there's lots of things you can do there with language. We become walking thesauri. You don't even have to do that these days. When you're right at your computer, you can have thesaurus.com up on the screen, and that'll help you with developing more varied word choice, if you will. Now, it's important, I say less is more. Describers strive for simplicity, succinctness. And I think that's just summed up so beautifully in a quote from the philosopher and mathematician Blaise Pascal. She said once describing a letter, that writing to a friend said, I have only made this letter longer because I've not had the time to make it shorter. Yeah, it takes time to come up with the best words, to do language, to edit it down. And that's what we strive to do. Now, indeed, while we try to do all this vividly and even see beyond what's readily apparent, see that worm, see that football field, if you will, we do have to maintain a degree of objectivity. And describers sum that up on slide 42 with the acronym WYSI. W-Y-S. What could that mean? Well, what you see is what you say. And all we mean by that, really, is that we need to spare our listeners from a subjective interpretation on the part of the describer. Now, those interpretations, they're unnecessary, they're unwanted. Let your listeners conjure their own interpretations based on your commentary that is as objective as possible. So, no. He's not furious. No, she's not upset. Rather, he's clenching his fist, or she's crying. Let the audience make their own judgments. You know, maybe their eyes don't work so well, but their brains' interpretive skills are intact. We don't need to provide anything that isn't provided for the sighted audience. Going back to our very first slide, those three curved lines to the right of the curve in the letter D, leave it right there, three curved lines. Resist the temptation to explain. We describe, we don't explain. We show, we don't tell. You don't need to tell folks that they represent radio waves or sound waves. No, folks out there have great brains, they grow up in the world. We provide only what is being left out when someone can't see. And I think to speak to that, actually, Anais Nin, the great writer and diarist, she said, you know, she recognized that it's so difficult to do. There is no specific objective thing. We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. Yeah. But we need to war against that temptation to interpret for our audience. Let them do that themselves. That's the fun in enjoying any piece of art. And this little cartoon on slide 45, I think, makes the point quite nicely. Pickles by Brian Crane. There's Opal. The older couple, Opal, is saying to her husband, Earl, "This yard looks like a mess, Earl." Well, Earl responds, "Henry David Thoreau said, it's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. B, I see a wild, untamed area of indigenous flora flourishing and thriving as nature intended. Opal responds, yeah, and I see a husband who's full of baloney. There you go. And winding things up, the fourth fundamental, vocal skills. Oftentimes, certainly for media, it is a separate voice talent who voices description written by a describer. Usually in performing arts, one and the same person. But in understanding description, you have to understand that meaning is made with the voice. Meaning is made with the voice. The voice can communicate so much that it will enhance what you've done with your words. So indeed, the voice talent, it's like they say about lighting designers or the sound designers on stage and theater, they can make or break an actor. Well, a voice talent can build on, if you will, a good voice talent can make meaning with the voice, but it isn't quite so clear with the words. And conversely, a bad voice talent can take beautiful description and ruin it. A quick example here. Let's see. See if you can see what you have here. On this slide 47, yeah, it's pretty clear. A woman without her man is a savage. I think we can all agree on that. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. I bet there are a few of you at least who are thinking, what the hell is he talking about? Woman without her man is a savage? How would you say those words back at me and make it mean the opposite? Don't change any words. Don't rearrange any words. Don't add any words. Woman without her man is a savage. Well, of course, you've probably figured it out by now. Woman without her man is a savage. Now, let's try one more, maybe a little more difficult perhaps. That is not. Simply say that aloud so it makes some sense. That's all you need to do. Can you figure that one out? I used to use this in speech classes back in the 70s when I taught high school speech and theater. Sure, yeah, insert those commas. What's punctuation except an indication of how to do your voicing? Slide 50, that is. That is not. Jumps right off the screen and bites you in the leg, doesn't it? Yeah. And then finally, with vocal skills, it's important to remember the concept of consonance, the idea that the voice talent must match the tone of what's being described. When description first began, we were so cognizant, so we emphasized so much this idea of objectivity that most describers voiced in a monotone. So like, now he's moving here, now she's moving there, now they're doing this. Like a golf announcer almost whispering into the screen. Well, that can be, I think, as jarring, as distracting as someone who's overdoing it and acting. You're not an actor as a describer. You're serving the actors and the theater and the film and the museum exhibit, and you're serving the people who are listening to you. So simply the subtle thing, having in your voice the tone of that serious scene or the tone of that happy scene, and that will help convey what's going on, what those visual images are. So we're coming up on 3 o'clock here. I want to put up a slide that simply has my contact information and other information about my book that was published by the American Council of the Blind last year, actually in 2004, the Visual Made Verbal, a Comprehensive Training Manual and Guide to the History and Applications of Audio Description. I encourage you to look at my website, audiodescribe.com, as well as the website of the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project, which I direct, acb.org/ADP. You will find there more information than you could possibly want to find about audio description, and it's geared towards consumers, So they can find out what TV shows are on with description, what films have description, what's the latest DVD out with description, what museums, what theaters around the country have description, and much, much more. And finally, I note at the bottom of this slide, we have a 3-day Audio Description Institute training coming up this July in Minneapolis. So if you did not like this last hour, you surely will not enjoy 3 days of me in July in conjunction with the American Council of the Blind's annual meeting. Right before that training, we'll have a 3-day audio description project conference with describers and scholars and consumers of description from all around the world convening in Minneapolis to talk about description and explore all kinds of things. Stay in touch with me. Send me an email if you want more information about any of those events. And with that, Peter, I'll open it up to questions that I guess I will look at on the chat screen here.
All right. Very good. I had the pleasure to attend a session that Joel did at a conference last November. So in case you were sleeping during the presentation here, Joel certainly enjoys what he does. I think that definitely comes across. For those of you in the webinar room, you can submit your questions in the chat area. Simply use your cursor, click on the chat area. When you submit your question, you will not see the question. It's been submitted, but the presenters and moderators will be able to view the questions. For those of you who are using the app, you can type your question directly into the chat area. And at this time, I will ask Eric to give our telephone participants instructions on how they can ask questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time on the phone, please press star, then the number one key. Once again, that's star and the number one key. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key.
All right. While we're waiting for folks to get in the queue there, some questions, telephone participants. So we've had some questions that were submitted by email in advance. But I'm going to ask one myself, because I can. I've had some involvement here. You know, the Great Lakes Center is located at the University of Illinois Chicago. And they have a lot of projects that come through where artists, you know, have displays, you know, for a period of time. You know, what would you say your best practices in terms of working with those, you know, those sort of temporary, you know, they may be here for 2 weeks, they may be here for a month, those types of displays, whether they're, you know, artist drawings or photographs or sculptures and what have you. You know, what is sort of the best practice for the university in terms of who wants to provide audio description for these, you know, displays and communicate that information? What are the kinds of things that a university can do?
That's a great question, Peter. And there are a couple of things that come to mind. First, if the university knows about the exhibit, has the images, has access to the sculptures, whatever they may be, in advance, they can certainly work with people who know about description to write description of each of those images, maybe a couple of paragraphs, perhaps, and even record those descriptions, voice those descriptions, and make them available to folks perhaps as an MP3 file that they can download to their own smartphone, or you can have audio tour players there. I go back to, of course, people doing this on audio cassettes quite some time ago, but nowadays more and more folks are downloading description and using an app to pair it with the soundtrack of a film, or certainly in an exhibit. So you can record it. You can also train your docents, your guides, to be able to be proficient in description so that they can take people around the exhibit and describe as they go, as well as perhaps provide background information that they may be providing to everybody who comes anyway. The other thing, too, is to think in advance about ways in which you can convey the images tactilely. And I don't mean that you necessarily want to be bugging the artist and saying, hey, can we put our hands all over your painting? Probably you're not going to be able to, but it may be that you could do a not even a 3D print job, but a representation of a painting in relief, if you will, as a bas relief, so people can touch and feel what they can't see. It may be that simple things like a feather or a piece of cloth can give someone the sense of the texture in a work of art. Or even a model, a small model. Here's where 3D printing can come in handy. You can print your own model of whatever that sculpture is rather than having to commission an artist or someone to develop models. That's a great way to have a little touch cart and let people touch models of what's on display. That's a great thing too. So it's a matter of recognizing and evolve all of people's senses.
Very good. And like you said, that's something that, museums have increasingly have done, and actually in some Justice Department settlement agreements with museums, it's actually required them to create and provide, 3D tactile representations of some of the exhibits to give individuals that are blind or have low vision that tactile, experience in addition to having it described.
That's right.
I'm gonna ask you one other quick question here, Joel. As a person who is blind myself, I listen to a lot of old-time radio, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, and I'm not making a comment about your age. Could you talk about that in comparison, because it's almost the opposite of what they did on old-time radio. But talk about that, what they did on old-time radio and providing that description for everyone. Everyone was blind when it comes to radio. So, how they did that and how that, relates to, audio description that you're talking about today.
I have to make one quick comment, Peter. You may know this gentleman. I've got to just honor and invoke the memory of the great Eddie Walker, Washington, D.C. native, blind from birth, was Willard Scott's radio pal, radio partner for many years here in the D.C. area, the Joy Boys. Well, for the last 25 years, he hosted a Sunday night program here on WAMU called The Big Broadcast, and he would play those radio theaters. Still available every Sunday. They have a different host now, but it was just a wonderful thing. He had such appreciation for the skill of radio theater artists, not the least of which is the Foley artist, which you may know is the first person responsible for making all those sound effects. That's an art form that hasn't been lost, because you may think that when you go to a film, all those sounds you're hearing were picked up by a microphone on the soundstage. No, those sounds are created after the filming is done, by and large. And the actors are voicing their words to be paired with them in the film. Foley artists create all those sounds and sound effects. It's really quite a wonderful thing. You're right, Peter. Everybody's blind with radio theater, radio drama. So you don't have to be the describer of visual images. There are no visual images. You simply represent the visual, the action, with sound. So, Eddie had a little door he could open and close right at his microphone to show a door opening, or he had shoes there where he could represent people walking or whatever, things like that. All kinds of little Foley artist tricks. So that's a great example. A little different than audio description. I think perhaps what's more akin to audio description is what the great radio play-by-play announcers do for baseball or football or what have you. Broadcasting on radio, they're broadcasting something that is visual, and they can oftentimes describe with great skill to help people see what is going on the football field or the baseball field.
That's another thing I was going to mention. You know, a specific announcer, Kevin Harlan, who works for Westwood One Radio, does football games. And you had mentioned this earlier. When he's describing the football field, he'll say, you know, that the Broncos are moving from left to right. When there's a punt, he will give the actual hang time in seconds, you know, to give you an idea just how long or how short the, you know, the ball was actually in flight. But yeah, if folks want to get an idea of you know, in the moment, audio description, you know, listen to a play-by-play announcer for an NHL, you know, hockey team with as fast as they're moving around. Joel, someone wanted to know if there is an audio version of your book that's available, and if not, if that's something that you're considering.
Great question. My background, of course, is in radio and theater as a voice talent and a voice artist. An actor, and I do want to hopefully by the end of this year record the text of the book with descriptions of images, of course. By the end of the year, hopefully be able to record that and make that available. But what is available now is if you go to the acp.org website, in fact, it's on the screen there, https://mall.acb.org/mini-mall-shops/pages-and-tracks. That is will direct you to where you can download, you can purchase the print book, but you can also download it as a Word or text file. And most computers nowadays have the capacity to read those files to you. You don't necessarily have to have a fancy screen reading software like JAWS or Window Eyes. You can download that file and the computer will read it to you if you have a fairly recent computer with that kind of software built in. So that's one way of making it an audio book, if you will. But hopefully by the end of the year we'll have a formal one featuring the dulcet tones of yours truly.
Fantastic. Eric, I'm going to check with you, see if we have any questions from our phone participants at this time.
No, sir. I'm showing no phones over. No questions over the phone line.
All right. Well, very good. We'll go back to our Joel. You saw the one of the questions that came in asking about providing specific guidelines and are there best practices for providing audio description. Obviously, you know, in this shortened time frame, you couldn't go more in depth. You mentioned the 3-day, you know, conference, which would clearly outline best practices, guidelines, and so forth. But other resources, training, information that you can provide to individuals that may be interested in becoming an audio describer?
Well, sure. You know, he shamelessly plugged his book again, The Visual Made Verbal. It's available on Amazon.com, also at its own dedicated website, thevisualmadeverbal.net. It's intended to be a training manual. It essentially puts out in print a lot of what goes on at those training sessions that I conduct worldwide. There's actually even a website that's associated with the book so that you can, at a certain point in the book, you talk about a particular exercise, where you can go to the website and see a clip from a movie or a play or whatever and work on that as a description practicum, if you will. So I think that book is helpful. Again, at the acb.org/ADP, Audio Description Project website, we have posted there, you might have to do a quick search on guidelines or best practices, but we have posted there the latest best practices guidelines that were produced by the American Council of the Blind. What we did with that really was to take the best of the best guidelines that exist for description around the world. I don't say most countries, but a number of countries, as they've developed capacity with description, have developed their own best practices, their own guidelines, and they're very similar one to another. The folks at the Canada Council of the Blind and a great description company in Canada, Accessible Media Inc., they have, I think on their website, access to the Canadian best practices. There are best practices available in Spain by the group ONCE, O-N-C-E, which is the Spanish equivalent, if you will, of the American Council of the Blind or the National Federation of the Blind. And they have guidelines. The UK, I should mention that first perhaps, because they were really the first to organize best practices and guidelines that are online. And I think the best way to access those would be at the rnib.org/UK. RNIB meaning simply Royal National Institute of the Blind. And I'm pretty sure they have a link to description guidelines that are used in the UK. Again, they're all fairly simple. They all focus principally on media. But in the UK, you will find description guidelines for live theater as well. In fact, in the UK is the only country where you can actually become certified as a describer for live performance in particular. That's something that the American Council of the Blind is beginning to look at as well, because right now just about anybody can hang out a shingle and say they're an audio describer. Well, there's more to it than just looking at something and talking. There really is, there are best practices, there are guidelines, and we're looking at the possibility of developing an American certification for audio describers.
That was one. That was going to be the next question that someone had submitted. So you got into that, and I was going to add something to that. You had mentioned early on in the presentation your educational background, PhD, and work in Europe. So you know, in addition to any other additional thoughts that you have on the possibility of coming up with accreditation, certification, licensing for describers, what about educational programs at post-secondary institutions here in the United States? Any programs that are up and running or looking to start a program similar to what you were able to attend in Europe?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, there's very little. And oftentimes it's like a course here and there. I taught courses for Montgomery College here in the D.C. area, at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, at Penn State University. Boy, that's something that, you know, even you guys right here at the University of Illinois Chicago, perhaps you could work with the university to develop a series of courses that could as a result of what, in an audio description major perhaps, or at least the study of description. I'd be thrilled to work with you on that. The reason I think for its, they're not being much at all in the United States is because in Europe, it's considered a form of audiovisual translation. As you are aware, in Europe, they get most of their film from the United States. It's in English. So there's quite an industry in the dubbing of English spoken in American films into French, into German, into Spanish, what have you. There are certain countries that are primarily dubbing countries, but then there are also countries that are primarily subtitling countries. And that's, again, an industry there. The translation of one language to another and then represented by words on the screen, well, the folks that are involved in that work, there's a whole range of academic programs in many countries that focus on audiovisual translation, subtitling, dubbing for film, for television. They learned about description. I actually was involved with this about 15 to 20 years ago in working with some of about 10 of the leaders in audiovisual translation in Europe. They convened in the area of Portugal, and I led them through training in audio description. And they've run with it. They have developed master's programs, PhD programs in audio description. They've embraced it as a kind of translation. Of course, in this country, English is the dominant language. You know, there isn't that focus on subtitling. There's captioning. Captioning, of course, in this country, simply putting in words what is being spoken in English, putting that down on the screen in English words. Well, that's different. That's a transcription. It's not a translation. Translation is something that's studied academically in many programs throughout Europe, and so The University of Barcelona is one of the top programs for that. There's some Imperial College in the UK. There's some others in Germany and throughout the world, actually. There are few programs like that, but it's primarily in Europe.
Okay, excellent, gentlemen. Another question from the chat room was asked about is the art of audio description growing? So here in the United States, are you seeing it in more mediums? Or is it still fairly isolated in certain pockets and only with theater and television, movies? Are you seeing it more broadly being used?
It's growing. We are no longer in our infancy. We are, however, we're probably not past our adolescence, if you will. Description began in performing arts, and so perhaps that's, as far as the number of audio description programs around the country, I see that most the quantity there is available, but it has been embraced now by film. Just about every film release now has an audio description track that's accessible in the movie theater. The Department of Justice is looking at requiring that and requiring captions so that deaf people can enjoy films as they generally haven't ever done before. As I mentioned, I'm not sure if I mentioned specifically the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, that put into law some FCC rules that were adopted in the year 2000. They were struck down in court, but then in 2012, Obama signed into law this act, which requires 4 hours per week in the top 60 markets for the top 9 broadcasters, the 4 terrestrial broadcasters and the top 5 cable broadcasters, 4 hours per week. If you think about the number of hours of television and the multiplicity of channels that are out there, 4 hours, 9 broadcasters, that's nothing. That's nothing. In the UK, it has grown. It is now required, not 10 hours, 10% of all broadcasts must have description. Just like in the United States, we're now at 100% of broadcasts are required to have captions. But captions and the needs of the deaf were acknowledged 30 years ago. We're not quite there yet. In the UK, it's been embraced by the Royal National Institute of Blind, and they've been very influential at getting those requirements. 10% is the requirement. Most broadcasters do 20% of their programming. In this country, we have several hundred DVDs with description. In the UK, it's probably several thousand that are available. Of course, there are many more to go, but the UK certainly embraced it. And as I mentioned, I've done presentations on description and actual trainings in over 40 countries now. So it's growing. It's being embraced around the world. I will be introducing it in Uruguay and in Argentina next month and in May, speaking about it in Brazil and in Poland, two countries that do have significant description already. We're getting there.
Excellent. And then I've got two questions going to kind of tie them together, but both around the area, and you mentioned this a little bit, talk about some of the technologies that are used by the user, again, to actually access the audio description, in a museum setting or a setting similar to that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that because I think the future of description, I think I referred to it just briefly, is about downloading description tracks from the web, from the internet. Pixar, in cooperation with Disney, just recently released an app that it's really kind of amazing. I still think of it as amazing, although there are 3 or 4 versions of it that I've been working with over the years. The app, once you download it, it hears the soundtrack of a film that's playing in a movie theater. Then you download to the app the audio description for that soundtrack, and you can then play the audio description through your own smartphone, through your own earbuds, hear the description timed perfectly to the soundtrack of the movie in the movie theater or on the DVD at home. That, I think, is the future of description. Folks will bring description with them, if you will, to even to live theater, conceivably. There are some Broadway shows that have recorded description, even for live performance. So I think we're headed that way. Certainly that can be done in museums as well. Very simple to download an audio that you can just simply turn on when you go to the museum and use in your own smartphone. You know, it'll take a little while till we're at 90-100% of folks out there who have smartphones. It took a little while, but probably not more than 5 or 10 years, I would think. So I think that's the future of description, and I look forward to it.
And can you just explain briefly how audio description, the technology equipment that's used to provide audio description in a theater setting where you have a live play or theatrical production ongoing?
Sure. Yeah, and that's a much different bit of technology. But I mentioned Arena Stage. What was being used then and still is today for most assisted listening systems is an infrared system. Microphone on stage hears the sound, if you will, translates that into electrical pulses that are sent to a box above the proscenium. In that box, that electrical pulse is translated to an infrared beam of light. That light is received by a receiver, a little glass ball that you wear, and it puts the earbuds in your ear, and that glass ball receives the infrared light, translates that back into sound, and you can adjust the volume. So that's what's used nowadays. More often, though, you'll find audio description provided via FM radio. So it's the same kind of system. It's simply not dependent on that beam of light, so that a person in a live theater setting will get a receiver from the house manager with earbuds. They will just put turn up the volume, if you will. It'll be set to a certain frequency, and elsewhere in the house, the audio describer has an FM radio transmitter with a Stenomask microphone or a headset microphone, and that person is delivering the description live, again, in those pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue or critical sound elements. And FM radio goes through walls. You're not dependent on a line of sight, and it's also a portable system, too. You don't have those boxes installed over the proscenium, so you can pack up the whole system and take it to another theater and use it there. So that's essentially what happens in live theaters.
Excellent. And we have gotten ourselves to the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to end with this one last request. Would someone ask if you would be able to provide all of the URLs for the different resources, including your audiobook that you had mentioned. And if you're able to pull those together and provide those to us here at Great Lakes, when we post the archive and the materials, we can include a document with all of those links that you had mentioned.
I'd be happy to. No problem.
Excellent. Well, we have reached the bottom of the hour, and I want to thank Joel for his participation today. In addition, it's not just the 90 minutes plus that he spent with us today providing all of this great information. It's all the time that he took in putting together his presentation and preparing for that. So we truly appreciate his participation, and on behalf of the Media National Network, want to thank Joel for today's session. Want to thank all of you, especially for your attendance. Without your participation, we would not be doing the ADA audio conference series, so we appreciate your participation. Our next session will be April the 19th, and that will be Hot Legal Topics on Accessible Transportation. You can find information on how to register, description, speaker information by visiting ada-audio.org. As a quick reminder, today's session will be archived. Within 14 days, we will have an edited transcript posted along with the audio, the handout materials, and the additional resource sheet with all of the URLs and links that Joel mentioned during his presentation. So So once again, thanks to Joe, and thanks to all of you for participating. Those of you in the webinar room, you can simply close out your browser. For those of you on the telephone, you can simply hang up. Look forward to seeing you in April. Good day.
Thanks, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.